Blog Talk Radio.
And a welcome in, and happy Sunday to you. Your own Uncle Mark here with you again on a beautiful Sunday right here in southeastern Pennsylvania. And welcome into the Fret House Sports Garage this morning. Yeah, we changed it up a little bit. Yeah, I came in with the other music, and we'll probably exit with our regular real hammering theme. Little more relaxed, actually, today. I'm kind of running solo as my two compatriots are both out of town. Sidekick has gone deep down south, down into the Florida neck of the woods, and my crew chief, Brandon, has gone just slightly south to Delaware for the weekend. So my hat's off to both of my cohorts as they do a little, last-minute getaway here before we count down summer and count it out completely. We're closing into autumn, and it's a great, great time of year. I don't have to tell anyone out there. If you follow motorsports, you know in stock car racing, obviously, we're entering into the 10-race period known as the chase for the Sprint Cup, and now everything kind of ramps up. And for those of you who follow NHRA, well, likewise, similar schedule, we're entering into the countdown to the championship. That has kicked up, and that kicks up, of course, this weekend. Just six events over the next 8 weeks for NHRA versus the 10 events over the next 8 weeks or so for NASCAR. But we'll kind of touch on all of those. In the meantime, I know I do have up in the spotter's perch and watching the board, I do have Fret House Mike as my cohort this morning, this afternoon. So kick back, relax. Feel free to reach in and join the conversation if you would like to. You can do that easily by dialing 347-826-9964. Looks like good news is we do have everybody's picks. So as we roll through the hour, we will be bringing some fantasy chat. You know, as we do. You know how we do it. If you've listened before, you kind of know how we do it. Before we get out of here at 1 o'clock this afternoon, we'll share some fantasy insight and make our fantasy roster picks. We'll discuss where things stand in our in-house Fret House Sports NASCAR Fantasy League. We actually are replicating the chase. So there are now 16 top members of our fantasy league. There are 30 of us total. But only 16 of us are actually included as part of the chase. So we'll actually be able to crown a champion by mid-November from Fret House Sports, whoever wins the chase in our group. The rest of us, well, that's okay. Myself included, I'll speak for me. I'm going to look to just spoil. I'm just looking to get a win here or there over the next 10 races to just kind of play spoiler. So the fun never ends, that's for sure. Right here at Fret House Sports. We're always into something. So, welcome in. And, I don't know, is it too early to say, why don't we crack open a cold one? And let's look back to a week ago. Oh, yeah, man, top that up. That's great. You know, a week ago in the NASCAR scene, there we had it. Joe Gibbs Racing just continues to shine through. They've kind of flipped a switch, haven't they? They've flipped a switch, I suppose, maybe 10, 11 weeks back now when Kyle Busch made his return and he started a tear. And, well, before you know it, his tear was sort of over after like a nice five-week run where he put together 3-4 wins over 5-6 weeks and picked up the mantle. No problem. Here comes Matt Kenseth. So he picks up a couple of wins over like 3 weeks. In the meantime, while Denny Hamlin has not had a win, he's continued to be strong and competitive. And I wouldn't count him out as we go into the 10 races comprising the chase to see Denny Hamlin roll through and grab a victory. And can't forget Carl Edwards, because Carl Edwards quietly put together a win early in the year, and then before anybody was looking there, he did it again. And he wound up picking up, you know, two of the better, what would you say, the two brass rings in the races that he won, including the Coca-Cola 500. So, you know, that Joe Gibbs crowd, you just can't count them out. At the same time, last week's race, I don't know what any of you thought, and please feel free, like I say, to share your opinions. Our chat room is open. If you're listening to us on your computer, you want to chat that way, or if you want to Skype in. Or again, pick up the phone, 347-826-9964. If you did see the race last week ago, it was not terribly compelling from the standpoint of, while it was, okay, that was great, Matt Kenseth picked up his fourth win. I mean, so, you know, feather to him, put that in your cap, that's fine. It was his fourth of the 2015 season. But essentially, he led the entire race. It was really a follow-the-leader kind of event. 352 laps led of 400 laps run. It wasn't exciting exactly. What it did was, obviously, it set the table. It set the table now going forward, because we're going to reseed. Everybody gets reseeded if you're in the top 16. And, of course, anyone below the cut line from 17 below, they're going to continue to accumulate points based on where their positioning is now. And there may be some modest shuffling. You know, we may see 18th move up to 17th, and, you know, 21st may climb up to 19th. I mean, some of that may occur, and some dropping as well. But essentially, the reseeding for the round of 16 has occurred. And what we do know is that, you know, it's going to be led by Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, Matt Kenseth. They're right up at the top with 3 points per win. They each have 4 wins. So they're going to lead the thing away with the 2012 points. Logano, Harvick, they come in second. 2009, you've got Junior, you've got Kurt Busch, you've got Carl Edwards. 2006, because they each have a couple of wins. And then Keselowski, Truex, Hamlin, each have a win, 2003. And then we shuffle on out to fill out the card, as it were. On the undercard, you've got McMurray, made it for the first time. You know, I don't know, go ahead, finally, Jamie McMurray. You know, since they've been doing this over the last 10, this will be the 11th, I believe, year that we're doing this particular format. McMurray has continually always missed it. Every time they extended, every time they opened the field, he would always just miss it and just miss it. Well, he's in there this year. Jeff Gordon is still in there. We've talked all year about this is the swan song. This is his final run. Is Jeff going to get himself a win? Can he stay in the thing? Well, he's in there. He's in there for today. He's in there for the next 3 at least. Ryan Newman, Mr. Consistent, making his second reappearance, trying to replicate essentially what he did a year ago. No doubt that man would like a win. I don't think there's any doubt about it. He hasn't had one since 2013. So he is well overdue. Paul Menard, there you go. Another one, sort of, you know, been the bridesmaid, not the bride. Well, this year he's kind of pierced the veil now. He's gotten into it. He's official. And Clint Bowyer rounds it out. Now, Clint Bowyer, we kind of discussed it. I mean, Michael Waltrip Racing is a thing of the past. Once this is all over, there will be no more Michael Waltrip Racing. So Clint Bowyer carries the banner. It's a frayed and tattered banner, certainly, going into the chase. But, hey, you never know. Once again, it does go back to last year ago. Ryan Newman was able to get himself all the way to Homestead, Miami, without actually securing a victory. And he came darn close to winning that one when he did have to push all his chips to the center of the table. So if he could do it, I guess it stands to reason almost anybody could. In taking a look at it, dominance in the chase appears to be Toyota Racing Development. Go figure. In the first half of the year, Toyota couldn't sniff a win. But in the second half of the year, they have been certainly, I guess, the class of the field. They wound up getting five TRD representatives in the chase. We've got four, of course, just with Joe Gibbs Racing. So the entire Joe Gibbs Racing stable is in there, and securely so. And throw in Boyer, as I say, carrying the tattered and somewhat frayed banner for Waltrip and company. Now, in the meantime, Chevy, they're secured with nine positions in the chase. Now, once again, as I said, going into the beginning of the year and utilizing the original package, the original aero package and rules package, Chevrolet was dominant. Hendrick Motorsports has three of the four in their stable representing for Chevrolet this year. Stuart Haas essentially has repeated what they did a year ago, and they've resurrected with Kurt Busch and, of course, defending champion Kevin Harvick. So there's two SHR Chevys, and they've been just raw dominant power. We have seen that through the year. So as we revert back to 2015 original, I say that in quotes, original rules package, be curious to see if, in fact, the Stuart Haas and the Hendrick Motorsports guys come back to play. Will they suddenly resurrect their raw power? Richard Childress Racing has a couple in there, as well as then, one and one, a couple of extra Chevys, you know, as I mentioned, McMurray being in there. And, Paul Menard, Newman, that's kind of fun, you know, to see them in there. And we don't want to sleep on Marty Truex, but he's been kind of quiet, hasn't he? I mean, we really haven't heard, we haven't really seen for Marty lately, and we would like to know, is he going to come to play? Can he do it? And we'll speculate on some of that. What do we got? We got a question there, Fred House. Mike, hit it up.
Well, I have one. Yeah, I just had one that
sure.
I wanted to throw out there real quick
because
it was on the agenda and you're talking about it now. What is the thinking behind going back to the old rules package for Chicagoland? Why do it?
Well, yeah, I know. Essentially, this has been crafted as the right thing to do for the sport by the teams, in terms of the teams. In other words, NASCAR's view was so much has been, I guess, so many resources that have already been put in place under the original package while they were willing to test the low downforce. And, of course, we saw them test the high drag and higher downforce. While those were something they were willing to play with, there was just not enough resource, they believed, especially for some of the smaller teams. And I guess you could certainly go to, let's say, JTG Daughtry with A.J. Allmendinger, and you could certainly turn to Truex with Furniture Row, that those teams would be placed at a disadvantage to try to maintain all of the changes required. At the same time, your question is absolutely valid, and I agree with you, and I think a lot of NASCAR fans probably as well are saying, man, you know what happened? They just let us taste the most delicious stuff for a couple of weeks, and now they're saying, I'm sorry, that's off the menu. So we're gonna suck it up and we're going to eke it out. I guess on the upside is, and we should know following this event, according to Steve O'Donnell, they will be announcing the rules package going forward for next year. So it's probable, I think it's probable that we could anticipate, you know, that we'll see some of the new, already replaced low downforce package brought to bear for next year. Additionally, you know, for what it's worth, I guess Goodyear, too, they've had issues from the standpoint of they do need time to develop track specific and aero specific tire product to make the thing work. Now, we're going to the mile and a half, as you know, Frat House Mike, and as our audience knows, we're going to do 5 mile and a half, 5 cookie cutters going forward now through the chase. In addition, you know, we're going to throw in a super speedway. That's always fun, you know, because we can roll the dice with Talladega. That opens the door, and that becomes the real, you know, gut buster. And we'll throw in Martinsville, and, you know, that's a smaller track. We're going to throw in Phoenix, which is a relatively flat track. So there'll be some change-ups, but essentially, because they're maintaining the 2015 rules package, I'm quite sure that NASCAR feels, whether it's good or bad for the product, whether it's good or bad for fans and the racing, I'm quite sure they feel somewhat content that, hey, listen, everything these teams need to make the rest of the year happen through the chase is already in-house for most of them. You know, some of the smaller teams, you know, be it a driver like Josh Wise, who's, you know, who's driving, you know, in whatever ride he can get, you know, for Levine or whoever it is, many of these small teams can't only have maybe one backup each week when they move from track to track, you know, unlike the superpowers, you know, of JGR and HMS and Stuart Haas and et cetera. So it's going to be curious. Hopefully today will be interesting. And I'm going to throw that out for our audience. If anybody cares to comment, you know, we're going to start up today's chase for the Sprint Cup. And we started at a one-and-done track of Joliet with Chicagoland, which is within sight of the Windy City, but it's not actually in Chicago. It's in Chicagoland. So relatively close. But and here's my question. If you had your druthers and you were in charge of NASCAR, is Chicagoland actually the best track to begin this chase for the Sprint Cup at? You know, could we maybe consider, you know, opening at a Talladega or maybe a Martinsville? Or, I'm not a big fan of Homestead, and we know how rainy it can be there. As we get later into the season, because that's, holy crow, that's all the way down at the very tip end of Florida. You know, maybe we open at Homestead. If you have a thought, if you would change the schedule modestly for the chase, give me a call. Let me know what track you would like to go to, because quite frankly, I think there would be one or two venues that we would like to maybe switch out, especially as we get into the chase time. And very good point. And thank you, Liz, friend of the show, Liz, who's listening in, has commented. And rightfully so, and I think many would agree if you're listening out there, that stock car racing really needs to bring a road course into the chase format. We saw 2 road courses at the Sprint Cup level. They are always compelling. They're a lot of fun. We go to Xfinity. We see multiple at the Xfinity level. I believe they run 4 different road courses through their structure during the year. And road course racing is just, I mean, it's far and away a different animal. It's sort of like, you know, short track racing is different from mile and a half. Mile and a half are different from super speedway racing. Each brings its own flavor and dynamic. And, what do you think? Shouldn't we throw that into the mix? Don't we suppose we want the best recipe? And I would include the idea of getting a road course in as a good idea to spice up our recipe. Now, in the meantime, if you're with us, feel free to grab yourself a ice-cold beer or go refill your coffee cup, because we are chatting some NASCAR. We will be switching around. We're just with you for 1 hour today. So we're going into the top of the hour at 1 o'clock. So if you would like to climb aboard and chat along with us, feel free to do so. I am your host, Uncle Mark, and I'm with you for another 40 minutes or so. 347-826-9964. You can climb aboard and give us a shout. Now, I'm taking a look at the Chase grid for 2014, and it's kind of fun to look back then and compare this year to last year. You know, quite a few of the same drivers are in 2015 that were in 2014. Last year, of course, you know, Keselowski, he was the top seed. He went to Joliet back in September of 2014, and he won the season opening race of the Chase. Gordon was in it last year. Earnhardt, Johnson, Logano, Harvick, Edwards, Busch, both Busch, I should say, Busch times two. Hamlin was in it a year ago. So we recognize those familiar names. Oh, don't forget, there he was, Mr. Consistent, Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman was in it a year ago. Matt Kenseth was in it a year ago. But we had a couple last year that we missed this year. We're not seeing a return for Casey Kane. You know, Hendrick Motorsports, I've chatted about it before. I remember Sidekick making a good point, and it is a valid point, that I suppose when you look at Casey Kane and you balance him against drivers across the spectrum at the stock car level, Casey Kane has nothing to be shy about. He has nothing to feel badly about. He's a top-tier, top-flight guy. But when he's compared to his stablemates, he's on the outside looking in, and he really didn't make much noise this year, and it's clearly evident because he's not in the 16 field this year. Unfortunately, likewise, A.J. Allmendinger. Allmendinger, once again, see, there's argument that had there been a road course in last year's Chase event, I think we would have seen Allmendinger go further. I believe he could have probably gotten through had they placed a road course into the maybe contender round. He probably would have been able to survive it and continued forward rather than getting, you know, essentially booted out. Now, this year he came darn close, but unfortunately, Watkins Glen was a heartbreak. Shot me in the dart with a heart. Oh, no. Can't believe it. Everybody wanted Allmendinger to win, and he had nothing but trouble that day. He had motor problems. He had ignition issues. Oh, my goodness, fuel cell issue. It just seemed as though nothing went right for AJ. So he's missing from the Chase this year, unlike last year. The Biffle. Yeah, Greg Biffle. Getting along in the tooth, the Biff. 45 years old. Not really a contender lately this year. Over maybe the last 5 weeks or so, we had seen a little more speed, maybe a little better edge coming to Roush. But boy, oh boy, when all was said and done, Roush didn't do it. It's amazing, you know, looking back to last year, there was Carl Edwards. He was the class of Roush before he made the move, obviously, to Joe Gibbs this year. But once they took Edwards out of the mix, my gosh, it was sort of like they let the air out of the tires over at the Roush organization. Unfortunately, Trevor Bayne didn't do it. We didn't see much from Stenhouse Jr. And the Biff, as I say, he ran as strong as he could, but I don't know. Was it lack of effort or just lack of equipment? But the Biffles, not in the mix this year. So there are at least three. Oh, did I mention Almirola? No, I didn't. I forgot Eric. Eric, too. Boy, he ran strong last week. He almost made it. My goodness, he was running top five a week ago as we were running around Richmond. It actually looked like Almirola might be able to steal one. Not to be. But they're replaced, as I say. They're replaced with some new, fresh faces. McMurray's in there this year. So go ahead, Chip Ganassi. You know, he's sort of like the Truex in the group. You know, the little one, the one-horse town. You know, the one-and-done, hopefully not, hopefully little better luck. He might be the consistent guy. Jeff Gordon. Jeff Gordon's in it. He was in it last year. Difference is, he doesn't have a win this year. So he's kind of in there just by a thumbnail himself. Paul Menard, Clint Bowyer. There's a couple that are making a return for some postseason fun, but, well, not. I take that back. Paul Menard has never been there. This is his first time through. At the same time, Clint Bowyer, yeah, he's been here before. It's been a couple years, but he's been here before. So we do have those fellows in the mix. So as we go to the cut, you know, looking back at last year, after the first round, Biffle, Almirola, Allmendinger, and Kurt Busch, they were the first ones out. Let me ask you out there, have you done your grid? Seems like everybody's got a grid. You know, this is the new thing. You know, NCAA basketball got the whole thing started years ago, and now every sport, you know, you have to do a bracket. You've got to do a grid. This is the only way that we can get fans engaged, I guess. You know, nobody's got a better idea. But for what it's worth, I'll tell you, I did a grid. Have you done a grid? Are you considering who you would see going out in that first round? Because I'm going to throw out some fun, sort of rhetorical Q&A, some questions and answers. And as I say, if you want to jump in, give me a call. Tell me what you think. Or hit us up in the chat room. Or Skype in. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, and I just mentioned who we lost last year, you know, the first that first three race series, you know, Joliet, Loudon, Dover, after it was all said and done, there went Greg Biffle last year. There went Eric Almirola last year. There went A.J. Allmendinger last year. And there went Kurt Busch last year. On a scale of 1 to 10, obviously, 10 races in the chase, what do you suppose, how many races could be won by a non-chase driver? Do you suppose that could happen this year? Now, looking at the record, just for fun, Dale Jr. did it last year in November at Martinsville after he had already been eliminated from the chase. And we also saw Jimmy Johnson do the same thing at Texas in November last year after he, too, had been already eliminated from the chase for the championship. What's interesting, those guys had been in it. They had already had wins. So I guess looking at it even a little bit further, if you wring out that washcloth a little bit more, since 2004, over this 11-year period, we've actually seen guys win who hadn't had races won. What do you suppose? Is there going to be, can we reasonably assume, that, you know, a Larson might suddenly show up and steal a race win away? Could Eric Almirola, could A.J. Allmendinger come in and just play spoiler? Casey Kane, my goodness, what a great time for Casey Kane to wake up and just sort of knock over all the bowling pins and kind of annoy everybody, right, by grabbing himself a win. What do you think? Who do you like? Is there a way we could see it happen? Since 2004, non-chase competitors who are already eliminated have done it with some frequency, almost to an average of 2 per year since 2004. Now, some years we had many, many times it occurred. There were like 6 such winners in 2006. And in some years, there weren't any, 2008. 2010. It didn't happen. There were no spoilers. But it's, yeah, looking back over the years, Tony Stewart's done it, Greg Biffle's done it, and Jamie McMurray have done it each 3 times where they got into the chase format and proceeded to peel off 3 wins and steal away thunder from all of the others who were actually in the competition for the championship. And you gotta love that. Or maybe you got to hate that if your guy was the guy that got, you know, kind of the screws put to him. And there were 11 others that have each done it one time. The Busch brothers have each done it. Keselowski's done it. A handful of others. So that's the first question, I guess. Yeah, what's the possibility? Can we see some switch up? You know, change the pitch up? How's another question for you? How about this one? What's the possibility, or is it just poppycock that it could never happen? Last year we saw Ryan Newman get all the way in, all the way down to Homestead, Miami. He never won a race. He ran top fives. He ran top tens. He maintained his point buffer with each receding. He continued to move from one round to the next. Kenseth was close. He did it too. He almost got there. He got bumped out before he got to the final three. Who, if anyone, is going to be the next Ryan Newman. Is there a Ryan Newman that's going to replace Ryan Newman? Or, my goodness, maybe it'll be Ryan Newman again. What do you think? Or is it poppycock? Nah, Uncle Mark, you're full of hot air, man. You're full of beans. It's not going to happen. We're going to see dominance. We're returning to the old 2015 rules package. It's going to be raw power. Wait and you see. You're going to see all those Hendrick guys are going to be running up front. You're going to see Stuart Haas dominating. You're going to see, Toyota, absolutely. They're going to maintain their edge. You'll see Kyle Busch continue to run hard and run strong. He can do it. Absolutely, we'll see Kenseth. Kenseth could do it. He did it last year, like you said. I mean, come on, dude. You're full of beans. You're not going to see any changes this year. I wonder. You know, parity is the only thing that keeps us from believing the fix is really in when it comes to stock car racing. So I throw that out there as a quiz. Another thought that came to mind this morning as I was prepping for the show, you know, you got both Kyle and Kurt Busch in the mix this year. We had them both in the mix last year. What's the possibility? Is Kyle and Kurt, are they going to be together by the time we get to Homestead, Miami? Boy, what a story that would be, right? I mean, consider the adversity, obviously, Kyle's been through. He missed 11 races, right? He was all busted up. We weren't sure the guy was going to walk again, let alone drive again. And I know there's been some static over the idea that, in fact, you know, well, geez, yeah, okay, he got his four wins and he dominated, but essentially the guy ran a part-time season. I mean, that shouldn't be right. He shouldn't be able to get in when he only ran 11 or 12 races, and, geez, there's been guys that have been running 22 and 26, and they can't get in. I don't know. You know, I went back and forth on that, and I guess my thought ultimately has been that with his dominance in just the 11 or 12 races that he did win, I think that speaks almost to a greater task that he achieved than those that ran 26 and simply also ran. In other words, hey, you know, okay, you know, Casey Kane, if he was bumped out because he only had three wins and Kyle had four and somehow the points pushed him out of the door, well, then I'd say, yeah, okay, apples to apples, it doesn't work. But essentially, see, points still matter and wins sort of still matter too. So, and wow, I really kind of balanced it. I guess I give props to Kyle for doing what he did in the short term that he had. In other words, in the short term that he had to make it happen, boy, the guy did. He made it happen. And likewise, big brother, big older brother. What'd he miss? The first three, was it? I think that's about right. He missed the first three while he was suspended, pending, you know, allegations that he was beating up his girlfriend and stuff. What did he do? He came back. He won a few poles before he finally got his first win, and he's run consistent and he's run strong. He's been there. He's been the class of Stuart Haas. If it hasn't been Harvick, it's been Kurt that we've been looking at from that stable. It's either been 4 or 41. We're missing the 14. Maybe he'll, I don't know, be a wild card. You never know. It could happen. He's not a bad plate runner. He could do something maybe at Talladega. No reason to count Tony Stewart out. He kind of goes into that question I ask. Hey, who's going to spoil? Who's going to throw a wrench into the works, do you suppose? And, of course, you know, Keselowski. I guess the final thought that came to mind, you know, last year he was the bully, wasn't he? He was the bully. We didn't really have a lot of tension. We didn't really have a lot of spark, per se, until we got to the chase format. And once it really came down to, boy, oh boy, start pushing those chips into the center of the table, boys, because these antes are going to get steep. If you want to play, you better come and bring your A game. And nobody was throwing more snot. Nobody was rubbing and racing and banging and thumping more than Keselowski. And, boy, was he just the evil villain. And I'm going to tell you what. I mean, speaking for me, and if you want to disagree and you want to call me up and say, hey, you know what, again, forget about it, and I'll – Frat House Mike, I know you might have a different take on it too, and I know you're listening. Keselowski moved up. He moved up like two spots on my rank of – respectability last year, because you know what? when it gets down to it, don't push me, man. Don't push me. And if you want to push me, I'm going to push you back. I gave him some credit last year. And we saw the sparks. My goodness. I mean, Harvick, he got edgy. He got nasty. He was pushing. He was shoving. Hamlin got, you know, a little bit, you know, gritting his teeth. My goodness. Cool as a cucumber. Matt Kenseth. Nothing upsets Matt Kenseth. Right? Oh, no. Last year, Keselowski got into Matt Kenseth a couple times, and boy, oh, boy, it spiced things up. So what do you think? Are we going to see a return to that? Are we going to see some villainous activity? Tell me what you think. I think that spices up the NASCAR routine. I think you need to have some of that rubbing and racing kind of thing. This can't be all vanilla. It can't be all cardboard cutouts. Oh, we're all one big happy team. And I suppose that's maybe what puzzles me and maybe troubles me with the idea of the race team alliance and how that may morph into, badging and extension of teams and satellite teams kind of branching out and becoming more and more and more morphed. Because if we're all in it together and we're all pulling the same way, it kind of dilutes, and in my humble opinion, it takes away from competition. Because really, if you're going to compete, I mean, there's going to be a point where it gets to be like, well, this is war. I don't know. I'm just saying. Yeah, I hear you. A comment from our friend of the show, Liz, and I hear you, Liz. I'm with you. I'm pulling for AJ Allmendinger. She likes that dinger, and I do too. And we know he's a Childress satellite, and they do share data, and they do get their engines from Childress. But I guess, you know, they're not really quite the same as, like, Stuart Haas is essentially sort of, Stuart Haas is to Hendrick Motorsports. They're kissing cousins, for goodness sake. I mean, they're almost Siamese twins. You want to talk about a megaplex of talent and a megaplex of resource pool. There you have it. There's eight of them. And then when you branch out their satellites underneath of them, and then you trickle down into Xfinity and you trickle down into trucks, my gosh, these guys just control stuff. But when you go to a JTG Doherty or you go to a Furniture Row, those are your guys. Who else am I thinking of? J. Scott Motorsport, running with Allgaier, running with Michael Annette, you know, little horses, you know, yeah, they've got some affiliation. Yeah, there's some file sharing, there's some info sharing. Yeah, we're getting some engines, we're getting some parts from, you know, mostly used parts from some of the bigger players. But essentially, those guys are running a race, and they are racing like heck every week because it is sort of a throwback. Man, we're racing on Sunday for our life in the hopes that next Sunday when we go to Loudon or the following Sunday when we go to Dover, that we'll still be in, the mix to possibly find winner's circle if and when we can do it. Whether we're in the chase for the championship or not, we're racing for wins. So good point, Liz, and I appreciate it, and I agree with you. Now, what I could do here is remind you, we've got about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. If you would like to comment and climb aboard, feel free to do that. 347-826-9964. We're going to be strict in our time segment here. We're going till the top of the hour at 1 o'clock, and we're going to wrap it up and ship out of here. I will be turning it over to our own frat house Mike over the next probably 5 or 7 minutes because we want to get an NHRA update. We are down in Concord, North Carolina this week at the ZMAX Dragway. They're running the 8th annual NHRA Carolina Nationals. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, the countdown to the championship will be kicking up with this event and these events, and we're going into the final heats this evening, and over the next 8 weeks, you know, they're going to be hitting up a lot of towns that, well, some that they hit actually in NASCAR. St. Louis, Missouri, they'll be coming to nearby right here to Frat House Sports in Reading, the Maple Grove Maple Grove Raceway. They'll be heading out to Texas. They're going out west then, ultimately to Vegas, and culminate with the mid-November finale at California. So the countdown to the championship is certainly alive and kicking. So we will be chatting up with Brad Housemike some of the NHRA stuff that's going on. But there were a couple of things that came across the wire during the week, and I just wanted to share them with you and give you some insight, maybe, you know, some food for thought. If you don't have a chance to comment today, if you're listening to this on archive, join us next week. And if you want to comment on any of these things, feel free to do so. You know, it was interesting this last week that we finally found out that Jimmy Johnson is going to remain with Hendrick Motorsports. In fact, yes, okay. There's been talk that the deal was going to be done. We've been waiting for the deal to get done. And now the deal has been signed, sealed, and delivered. Not surprising, right? Hold on a second. Back up the bus. I was a little surprised. What did you think? Yeah, he signed on for an extension of just 2 years. Really? Wait a second, just 2 years? You know, when we see contracts redone and we see contracts renewed, and that's essentially what we're seeing here, they're calling it an extension, but for all intent and purpose, Jimmy Johnson's contract is up for renewal. So they've renewed his contract, but for 2 years. I find that surprising. Does anyone else find that somewhat surprising? I mean, should I be surprised or, nah, not really. Listen, the guy's, he's a lock. He's not going anywhere. Don't worry about it. You know, just because Gordon's leaving, Jimmy Johnson, he's going to be around. Listen, that's Mr. Six-Time. He could be eight-time. He could be 12-time. That guy ain't going anywhere. I don't know. It makes me wonder. You know, because simultaneously, Chad Ganassi, his crew chief, well, he re-upped as well. The difference was Chad Ganassi extended for 3 years. Huh? He extended for three? Well, yeah, actually he did. Now, of course, you know, with Chad, he's signing with the team. With JJ, well, he's signing on with his sponsors. So there's a slight difference in, what would you say, difference in metrics, difference in language. It's a, well, to be pedantic about it, one guy's signing with management and the other guy's signing on with his sponsors. And I just found it curious. I don't know if anyone else did. And I'll be curious to see as we go, especially knowing that the 24 car is going to be vacated next year. I find it telling that Hendrick Motorsports would be willing to say to Jimmy Johnson, who's their, let's be honest, he's their leader right there with Junior. Junior's the most popular. Jimmy Johnson's the winningest for Hendrick's right now. I just found it curious that they would only sign him on for 2 years. Now, on the flip side, another sponsor we did here this week, Aaron's. Well, we already know Michael Waltrip Racing ain't coming back. And Aaron's has decided, you know what we're going to do? We're going to pull up stakes. We're going to look at this sport. And we're going to continue to find, what did they say? The terminology was, essentially, we're going to find innovative ways to spend our money in the NASCAR arena, but it isn't going to be with a car. So we know for sure that the 55, Aaron's Dream Machine, will no longer exist next year as we know it. So that's a loss to the sport in terms of a major sponsor, and it's certainly a loss for Toyota, as that Camry is not going to be running, so far as we know, unless someone wants to, I guess, buy it outright from Michael Waltrip. I mean, he's the owner of the car, and at this point, Michael Waltrip has, I guess, the rights to the 55 number. All of that evaporates at the end of 2015. So come 2016, I would imagine the number is available to any team that would like to, I guess you essentially, what you apply to NASCAR to obtain the number, it'll be available. And I suppose if you're a team that's going to move affiliation and join up with Toyota, you know, you might be willing to approach Michael Waltrip and say, hey, dude, what do you want for you know, how many of those do you have? I'll take, what do you got, five Camrys, 55, sitting around there collecting dust? We'll take them off your hands. So it'll be curious to see what happens. And good luck to David Reagan. Wouldn't it be fun to see David Reagan steal a win or two or three? Boy, up your nose to the entire NASCAR corporate, you know, that maybe we don't like so much, the whole corporation of NASCAR. Wouldn't it be great to see David Reagan grab himself a win or two, knowing especially that he's got no ride lined up for next year? Although, there is some talk, possibly he'll move back to the Xfinity Series. We'll see what happens when we get there. Now, another interesting thing, you know, the Ward family, I don't know. The Ward family just continues, in my view, to be tone deaf, and they just don't get it. They just won't quit, will they? This one came across the wire for me late in the day on Friday, and I read it, and I don't know. I sat back, and I just shook my head. I mean, I really can't believe what this family is attempting to achieve. But essentially now, we've come to understand that while the toxicology report has been put out, and it's been made evident, and it's been shared, and, you know, it's a court filing, and it's a court finding that, in fact, you know, Kevin Ward was probably, I don't know. I mean, I guess the word is intoxicated. I don't know what word you use when you say that, you know, he was smoking cannabis. He was smoking pot. I mean, he was, you know, there is an influence there. But in fact, no. The Ward family says, you know what, we refute that. We refute that, and we refute and refuse to even acknowledge that it had anything to do with his demeanor. It had nothing to do with his behavior. It would have had no influence whatsoever over the fact that Kevin Ward would be alive but for the awful, reckless misconduct of Tony Stewart, who went out there and willfully took the life of this fine young man. And again, I scratched my head. And if anyone, again, if you want to call me out, feel free to do that. We've got a few minutes to go here before the top of the hour. But at this point, I mean, more and more and more, I guess I'm finding myself in concert with Tony Stewart. And as the Wards refute undeniable evidence, I am hopeful that a civil court justice will do the right thing and absolutely refute their claim for wrongful death damages in what is, to me, an unfortunate but clearly avoidable circumstance had the right steps been taken by the right people at the right time. And it goes back to the idea that I've said before, it is a mistake. And sometimes it is terminal to assume that people in a position of responsibility will therefore behave responsibly. And I believe that the Ward family and the situation they have found themselves in is an unfortunate example of just that fact. 347-826-9964. Let's bring them in and chat just a little bit of NHRA. Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed, with our own Frat House Mike. Frat House Mike, good afternoon to you.
Yes,
tell
sir.
Us what's going on. What's happening, man? What's fun to watch there down in Carolina with the Nationals this week?
I'll tell you what's fun to watch. You know what's fun to watch is that John Force car decked out as a number 24. Boy, was
you're
that a
right.
class act? Is that a class
yeah,
act or what?
You are right about that. That is very cool.
I'm not a Gordon guy,
you know.
John Force paid homage this weekend as the countdown starts, as you just pointed out, at Z-Max Dragway in Charlotte, North Carolina. And in homage to Jeff Gordon retiring. Well, John Force has got a special scheme on his funny car, all decked out looking just like the 24 with the rainbow colors and the whole bit. You know, the other cars are driving with an homage as well. I saw that Courtney's car had the one wing on the back, you know, had a congratulatory message to Jeff Gordon. So it looks like the entire JFR team, in one way or another on all of their cars, is recognizing Jeff Gordon. So class act to the JFR team.
Yeah, from one champion to another, right? I mean, holy
crow,
16, yeah, right, 16 time. Nobody will ever best John Force, and yeah, I agree with you. Somebody of that magnitude, you almost would say, well, geez, he's a bigger deal in his sport maybe than Jeff Gordon is. But yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely, very cool. And I saved up the picture because I thought it was a great image of him in his funny car.
And let's see now, you know, the interesting thing about the countdown, as you pointed out, there's only six events. But on the front end, half of them are going to take place within one-week increments. In other words, 2 weeks from now, we will be halfway through the countdown. So we're going to go 1 week, 1 week, 1 week. Then after that, the final three events will take place over two-week increments.
Right.
So
gotcha.
It's really, this thing's going to move real, real fast over the course of the next 2 weeks. And because there are fewer events than we see in the chase, all the more important that people get a big jump and get it early. Now, we saw the U.S. Nationals 2 weeks ago. What a tremendous way for that to end in pro stock with Erica Enders getting her sixth Wally of the season. That is a remarkable accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Sixth Wally of the season. But what was really cool about it was she was running in the final against her teammate and probable Rookie of the Year, Drew Skillman, who has had a remarkable year himself and is in the countdown as well, and has a good spot on the ladder in pro stock today. Funny car. Well, listen, can we say it again? How about Fast Jack all over again? Yes, he got himself another Wally. And
dude, he's been dominant like Erica.
Well, you know, kind of like the JFR group.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, as you were pointing out. There goes Fast Jack, and who was his victim? Well, it was a JFR driver. Yeah, it was Robert Height. But Fast Jack, yeah, you know, you got Proc going up against Mike Neff on that one. That was just remarkable. Yeah, kind of like that. Top Fuel. Well, Morgan Lucas has just been remarkable in the past, well, I'd say about 4 or 5 weeks now. And he picked himself up another win over Dave Connolly. Now, that's how things went 2 weeks ago. Ultimately, in the end, as far as who makes the countdown, pro stock is exactly what we thought. Who were the first losers? Well, it was V Gaines and Roger Brogdon. Everybody else is in. Vincent Nobile's in. Drew Skillman's in. Larry Morgan. Jason Lyon. Chris McGahey. Erica's got the number one seed. Greg Anderson, number two. Funny car. Well, we were hoping for Courtney. It didn't happen. It was close. It was close, but just didn't make it. Alexis DeJoria got the 10th spot. I guess Courtney really is the big name that is underneath the line. Everybody else is in. Jack Beckman's got the number one seed. John Force, number five. And in Top Fuel, interestingly enough, Spencer Massey is an interesting story. We really don't know what the deal was. Spencer Massey mysteriously dropped from the DSR roster. Very, very unusual.
Wow.
I mean, immediately eliminated. No, apparently they claimed, DSR claimed conduct unbecoming to the team. But
good
my
Lord.
Goodness, Spencer Massey was a car that was going into the countdown. There are sponsorships on that car. I can't imagine how the sponsors are feeling about that. There is no driver right now. Actually, no, I'm wrong. Belushi is driving that, but not in the countdown. That car is not in the countdown as a result. Very, very, very odd situation.
Yeah,
nobody knows exactly what the story is. Nobody knows. Spencer Massey's had a history of alcohol and dependence problems, so I can only imagine. Who else didn't make the chase there or the countdown? Clay Milliken. didn't make it. Albeit Clay Milken's got the number one spot today on the ladder in Top Fuel. How do you like that one? Leah Prince.
So he's going to spoil. He could spoil.
Absolutely. Clay Milken could. Clay Milken's had a very, very good year. I was really rooting for him. But up at the top, as you might expect, Tony Schumacher, Antoine Brown, 1 and 2. Brittany Force in there at number 5. And the ladder today over in Pro Stock, Greg Anderson, number 1. Drew Skillman's going to go up against Vincent Nobile in the first round. That's an 8 and a 9. I'm just looking real quick here. Where is Erica? Number 3. Very nice. Erica's got a number 3 spot. She'll be going up against V. Gaines. That should be an easy round 1 win. And Chris McGaye has got the number 6 spot over in Funny Car. Where's my number 2? Number 2. Del Worsham, number 3. Ron Capps has got number 3.
Okay.
Courtney's in at number 9. She'll be going up against Fast Jack in the first round. That's not nice.
Wow.
No, that's not
yeah.
nice. Not the way things have been going there. Matt Hagen, number 7, going up against the Cruiser. John Force, number 6, going up against John Hale in the first round. And then finally, over in Top Fuel, Clay Milken has got the number 1 spot. Tony Schumacher, 2. Lee Pritchett, 4. Yeah, there it is. That's pretty much it. 5. And Brittany's in there at 12. So we'll see how this goes. I got to be honest, I'm not even sure what time you're going to see this. We've got so much football.
Yeah,
And NASCAR stuff too. I have no idea what time this is even on. I'll have to check it.
We'll be looking in for it. That's a fact. And you'll join us back next week because, as you say, we're going to run consecutive weeks now for the next few. So that's great. Very nice job. I appreciate that. A little update there. Give us a little round of applause here for our own Rat House Mike bringing that to us. Now, with just a couple of minutes that we have left, Rat House Mike, I guess, you know, we're heading out to Chicagoland Speedway. Real quick and dirty, it's a relatively young track. It just opened in 2001. They added some lights there so they can run at night if there's weather issue. They added the lights in 2008. As I said at the top of the show, it's a cookie cutter mile and a half. We got 4 turns of like 18 degrees of banking in each of the turns. So, you know, once you get on track, you can kind of get a feel for it and get a pace for it. We're running the original rules from 2015, so they're going to apply here. And it's 1 of 5 mile and a half we're going to see during the chase format. Now, do we have any kind of you have rosters or you have Eat My Dust?
I got both, and we can do it any way you want depending on time. If we just want to go through Eat My Dust, we can do it that way. If you just want Sidekicks Fantasy, I can do it that way. However you want to do it.
Well, let's do this. Why don't you share Sidekicks, I guess, Fantasy with us, and then we'll quick hit up our Eat My Dust before we get out of here.
Yeah, that's a good idea, good idea. All right, here's what Sidekicks got. Over in Reed's, he's going with Harvick, Logano, Kyle Busch, Cole Whitt, and Michael Lynette. He's got Logano winning it.
Okay.
In Spring Rubber, he's got Harvick, Kyle Busch, J.J., Gilliland, and Alex Bowman. And he's got Harvick winning it there.
Okay.
Now,
so we've got...
If we do the Eat My Dust,
yep.
Sidekick's got Logano for his Eat My Dust.
Okay.
Brandon has got Harvick. And I've got Truex.
Nice. I've got 60 seconds, which means I've got to make a pick. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to grab me some of that Penske action, and you can put me down for the 2 car. I'll take Keselowski to repeat as he did a year ago at Chicago.
You got it.
All right. Thanks very much, Frat House Mike. Thank you all for listening. If you're out there, thank you so much, Liz, our friend of the show, for your comments and your input during this morning's show, this afternoon's show. Folks, be sure to enjoy the day. Get out there. Kick the tires. Enjoy yourself some NASCAR. Enjoy yourself some NHRA. And, of course, you can't miss the football because that's on the menu as well. We will be back with you next week at our regular time, 11 till 12. And until then, you know what you got to do. Enjoy it. Bye-bye. Yeah, well.